Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The long debate is over. The change to open gay U.S. military service is, as of the president's signature today, the law of the land.
For we are not a nation that says, don't ask, don't tell. We are a nation that says, out of many, we are one. We are a nation that welcomes the service of every patriot. We are a nation that believes that all men and women are created equal. Those are the ideals that generations have fought for. Those are the ideals that we uphold today. And now it is my honor to sign this bill into law.
Congress has passed it. The culture has opened to it. The commander-in-chief has signed off on it. The repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell to big cheers at a signing ceremony in Washington this morning. Now it's time for the military to stand and salute. The Pentagon says, yes, we will. In the months ahead, military regulations will be reviewed, orders will be given, the new law will be implemented. This hour, On Point, implementing the new era of open gay and lesbian military service in America. You can join the conversation. Did you hear the cheers this morning? What about implementation? How should it, how will it unfold? What's easy here? What's hard? What's the future? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. Joining me now from Washington, first today is Anna Mulrine, defense correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. She's been embedded with U.S. troops and has been following the progress of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal. Anna Mulrine, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks. Good to be here.
And with me in the studio today, Marine Captain in Active Reserves, Seth Moulton, joins us. He served four tours of duty in Iraq, was a special assistant to General David Petraeus. Seth Moulton, Captain, welcome back to the program.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Let's listen to just a little bit more of the president this morning at the big signing ceremony for the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
No longer will our country be denied the service of thousands of patriotic Americans who were forced to leave the military, regardless of their skills, no matter their bravery or their zeal, no matter their years of exemplary performance, because they happen to be gay. No longer will tens of thousands of Americans in uniform be asked to live a lie or look over their shoulder in order to serve the country that they love.
Anna Mulrine, it was a huge point of contention for a long time, and now the repeal is passed into law. But it doesn't, and it is being celebrated in many quarters, and you heard it right there in the signing ceremony this morning, as a big step in civil rights in this country. The president essentially presented it that way himself today. But Anna, it does not go into effect immediately. Remind us of the timetable or the rollout here. How is it supposed to work? How is it likely to work?
That's right. It could take months, even up to a year, before the repeal is actually implemented throughout the military. First, the service chiefs will be doing their best to implement the law, to do training, and the Pentagon has been a little bit unclear about how exactly that's going to work. The Pentagon's top lawyer, Jay Johnson, said that it will be. It won't be immediate, but it won't be too long either. It'll be somewhere in between. It was almost like the three little bears.
Not too hot, not too cold, but
exactly,
pretty darn soon.
Exactly.
Okay.
So so once the service chief, so the head of the Marine and the Army and the Air Force, all say, okay, we're ready to do this, then then Secretary of Defense Gates and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs will send a letter to Congress saying that that the military is ready to implement the repeal. And then from the date of that letter, it's going to be another 60 days that the law is still in effect, that the ban is still in effect, and that anyone who comes out during that time could technically still be removed from the military.
And the Pentagon is being very clear in just the last couple of days saying, look, this don't ask, don't tell is still the governing policy of the U.S. military, and do not come out if you're gay, lesbian in the military until that is behind, until all that's done, until the new thing is implemented here. It's not just readiness that they're attesting to. There's another certification here, Anna, that it will not affect the performance of the U.S. military services. They have to certify that to what, Congress and the president?
That's right. And the study that the Pentagon came out with at the end of November made it pretty clear that a lot of the troops didn't feel like it would affect their readiness. But there were some kind of key areas where troops tended to dissent on that point, and that was in combat units. So in the Army and Marine combat units, you know, upwards of 60% of the troops who were surveyed said that they had concerns about how it would affect readiness. Now, during congressional testimony, Mullen and Gates both pointed out that an even larger number of troops said that they had already, to the best of their knowledge, worked with fellow troops that they believed to be gay or lesbian, and you know, it had no discernible impact or a positive impact on performance.
Admiral Mullen, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, saying, let's do this. Secretary of Defense Robert Gates saying to Congress, do this. Do it so that it doesn't get done in the courts and get sort of pushed in a jumble, in a rush on the military. But now it's done. Everybody's in. Everybody's voted. The president signed off. Seth Moulton, captain in inactive reserves in the Marines. You've got four duties, tours of duty in Iraq behind you. Let's think about implementation. We'll get into the details. But overall, do you expect disruption? Do you expect just salutes and here we go? What do you think's coming?
I don't think there's going to be a lot of trouble. The military is pretty good at following orders. And the reality is that most people in the military know that we've been serving with gay service members for some time. But there are still important questions. The Commandant of the Marine Corps has come out and said that gay troops will not live with and use the same facilities as straight troops. And I think that's a problem. I mean, he says on the one hand
that— He said that, but will that stand?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, look, he says that the issue with having gay troops serving openly is that it could disrupt unit cohesion, and I can't think of anything that would disrupt unit cohesion and trust more than having people forced to live separately. I mean, we need good order and discipline, not separate but equal. But the point is that these are questions that have to be asked, and as long as you have generals making these kinds of statements, we need to figure out what the real solution is.
Well, let's just start going down through the punch list, and presumably there'll be a lot of things that need thinking about here. But Anna, let me come first to you on just living arrangements, whether it's back in the U.S. at base or in the field, in the field of combat. What's been recommended here? Do we know what's likely coming?
Well, I think there's some, you know, aspects of this that are pretty clear, and one of them is things like housing and bathroom facilities, for example. On the housing front, you know, they essentially during this survey too, you know, asked service members whether, you know, how they would behave if they knew that they were living or birthing next to someone who was gay or lesbian, and well over, you know, into well over a quarter of them essentially said that they would take no action.
Anna, I'm really not interested in the opinion survey at this point. We are past that. It's the law. Now we're talking about implementing.
Yeah,
and there's
well,
a big study
I mean,
out there, and there are recommendations that are being made. People are talking. People in power in the military are talking about it already. What are they saying about living?
Well, and I think as a result of those surveys, you know, the military leadership has said, listen, we don't see this as a problem. And the idea that we would have separate bathroom facilities, well, they essentially called that a logistical nightmare and said that was something they couldn't recommend. Now, they've also said that commanders can use their discretion. So if they see, you know, problems cropping up, then if those are going to be more harmful to to morale and to unit cohesion, then maybe they could separate two folks who were having a particular problem. But they were under no obligation to do so.
So from their big report on privacy and cohabitation here, their recommendation that the Department of Defense should issue guidance prohibiting berthing or billeting assignments being based on sexual orientation, prohibiting that. Except, and as you say, Anna, that commanders retain the authority to alter berthing or billeting assignments on an individualized case-by-case basis in the interest of maintaining morale, good order, and discipline consistent with performance of mission. What would that mean, Seth?
Well, I suppose it means that there won't be any a strict discrimination policy. But on the other hand, if there's one individual whose actions are impacting or disrupting the unit, then the commander can take action to change that. The reality, of course, is that we have policies in the military mainly designed because of the interaction of male and female service mm-hmm. members that prevent and punish inappropriate sexual relationships. Mm-hmm. And I don't see any reason why we can't, at least in principle, simply apply those same regulations to gays and straights serving together.
Is that the plan, as far as you know, Anna, to essentially take the regulations covering sexual interaction, or harassment for that matter, and just apply them to everybody across the board?
Yeah, and that's what the Pentagon study said, too. You know, for the most part, the regulations that govern how opposite sex members interact will be the same as for same-sex couples. They even had a series of hypothetical situations at the back of one of the studies that mm-hmm. that kind of laid out some scenarios. And one, for example, was, okay, well, say you see a troop walking into a bar that's known to be a gay bar.
Yep.
What do you do? And the response was, well, it's the same as what you do if it's a known place of criminality, then maybe you might want to
say something. Wait a minute. Wouldn't that be irrelevant now? Wouldn't that be purely irrelevant under this new law? What would that have to do with anything at this point?
Well, I mean, this was one of the hypothetical scenarios that the Pentagon laid out.
I mean, that seems in the rearview mirror. You can be gay now and be in the military, right?
It seems, and that's what they're emphasizing to troops, and that's what they want to make clear. And this is kind of, these hypothetical scenarios were all laid out to let the Pentagon know what this next stage of training is going to be. And these are training scenarios that they're recommending commanders use for troops.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about implementing the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell and making way for gays openly in the military. Signing ceremonies in Washington this morning, the president and a big and very enthusiastic crowd signing what Congress has already passed. It is now the law of the land, and now it's over to the Pentagon and the military to implement. Here's the president, just a little more, at the Department of Interior, where they had a hall big enough for the crowd, at the signing of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal this morning.
I've spoken to every one of the service chiefs, and they are all committed to implementing this change swiftly and efficiently. We are not going to be dragging our feet to get this done.
Swiftly and efficiently, said the president this morning. And Mul Ryan of the Christian Science Monitor joins us from Washington. Marine Captain Seth Moulton joins us. Four tours of duty in Iraq behind him. Worked with General David Petraeus. He's now in inactive reserves. And joining us right now from Columbus, Ohio, Peter Mansour, professor of military history at Ohio State University, a retired Army colonel with over 26 years of service. Former executive officer to General David Petraeus when Petraeus was commander of forces in Iraq. He's been a member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Strategy Group and a graduate of West Point, author of Baghdad at Sunrise, a Brigade Commander's War in Iraq. Colonel Mansour, thank you very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom. Pleasure to be on the show.
So how do you look at this and implementation? How big a challenge is this for the U.S. military to get it done?
Well, we've done this before with other things like the integration of women into the military. And it's just a matter of education and training. The military will do something called a chain teach, where seniors educate their subordinates on the new regulations. And they'll conduct training as well, The Army has something called consideration for others training, which sets people up in scenarios and so forth. And that'll take a matter of months. But as the president said, this will be done fairly swiftly. And I think by the end of the year or early next year, it should be a done deal.
When you look at this, as someone who's been a quite senior commander, led troops, worked with General Petraeus and top generals there, what do you see as the major sort of checkpoints on the implementation list? What are the big issues to be now dealt with, Peter Mensah?
Well, the training and the education is one thing that's going to have to be done. And then beyond that, it's going to be, as Seth and others have pointed out, a case-by-case basis of assuaging the sensitivities of those who have strong religious or other beliefs against birthing with homosexuals. And again, that's something that it's a matter of leadership, and I'm sure the military can handle that. It will take some time before this settles out. And we saw that with the integration of women into the military. Of course, the integration of blacks is another case. And this won't be something where you can snap your fingers and change the attitudes of everyone who's serving. But I think given the fact that about 77% of the military said they had no problem serving with homosexuals openly, homosexual soldiers, that this will be something that settles out fairly quickly.
You can easily imagine all kinds of issues being opened up alongside this around gay partners and benefits and those kind of rights. Peter Mensah, what do you know about how the military is planning to address those perhaps inevitable questions now?
Well, the military has said that the gays will not be a protected class subject to equal opportunity regulations. It is not the law of the land that gays can be married and have domestic partner benefits and so forth. So as of now, the military is not planning to provide on-base housing to partners of homosexual soldiers, provide medical care and dependent benefits. That will be probably the next issue that will be politically charged. But that's one that's being fought in at the state level as well in terms of gay marriage. And again, the military is a reflection of the American society. And as those things settle out in the larger society, then they'll be settled out in the military as well.
The surveys that were prominently done recently came back saying that overall American servicemen and women are quite open to the idea of gays openly in the military. How big a challenge do you think the holdouts, if you will, or those who don't agree are going to be here? You know, is that a big problem? Is that just a give the order and it's done problem, Colonel?
I think it'll be a bigger challenge in the combat units than in the non-combat units just because of the sort of mentality that combat soldiers have. They have very close bonds. And for whatever reason, more of them are against serving with open homosexuals. But I think what's going to happen is, for one thing, not everyone's going to come out. And I've seen surveys that have said, in fact, the majority of service members now happy that they won't be discharged if found to be gay are not planning to come out openly. Those that do come out, though, I think the people who serve around them will look at them and go, oh, you know, I'm against serving with homosexuals, but Joe, he's a good guy, or Jane, she's a good gal, and you know, I don't see any problem with that. And so as these nameless, shapeless forms take on real personalities, people will see they're just people.
Seth Moulton, you served as a captain for tours of duty in Iraq. You were in combat situations. Now, in the surveys that were done, the Marines came back, combat Marines in particular, saying, I'm not so sure about this. What do you anticipate on the ground, Seth?
Well, I think one of the points that Colonel Mensah make, which is so important, is that this really is a question of leadership. And if you have leaders who are committed to this policy change and are committed to having an environment that is non-discriminatory, then people will come along. But it is a process of education as well. I mean, look, I went away to school and went to college and even to high school with people who were very opposed to gay rights. And I know a lot of people who just changed their mind when they started, living and working with gay people, which they hadn't done before in their hometowns or whatever. So the change will come, but it will take time and it will take committed leadership.
Anna, I mean, if you look at I mean, all these integrations that have gone on over many decades now have come, as a sort of a, I guess, a kind of march of civil rights in this country, but not without problems. It was a couple of decades after the racial integration of the U.S. military. There were race riots on Navy warships in the Vietnam era. And I'm looking at a report here from AP saying, you know, reminding us, long after service women were officially placed on equal footing with men, the sexual harassment has still been pervasive, a significant problem in the U.S. military. What about on that front? I mean, do you just clamp down, let's say, on sexual harassment? Do you just clamp down and get tougher right across the board, gay or straight, Anna? Is that what they're thinking about as a way of sort of dealing with that neck of the woods?
Yeah, absolutely. And as Peter and Seth point out, it's about leadership, too. I mean, as there are some these vignettes that are included in the implementation study kind of lay out a scenario in which there's harassment going on. And it's certainly clear if there are two soldiers who are living in the same quarters, and then there's harassment, and somebody's asked to move beds or not to shower with another soldier that's known to be gay. You know, just how the military is going to handle this, and essentially it comes down to making it clear to the soldier who's doing the harassing that this is an issue, gay or straight, that's just unacceptable.
I mean, Seth Moulton, Captain Moulton, this harassment could work either way here. Right. I mean, gays have been harassed in the military, even though they weren't out sort of historically. Now you could have harassment going the other way. Do you see the regulations that exist now as sufficient to sort of cover this and say, cut it out?
I do. I mean, the regulations are there, and it's often a question of whether the leaders abide by them or soldiers and Marines respect them. But there's another important point here, which is that it's easy to forget, I think, sometimes back here in America, that we're in a time of war. And as we make these changes, we need to make sure that they're implemented in a way that does not affect our ability to wage that war and to protect the lives of our fellow service members. This is a question of civil rights fundamentally. But the reality is the military suspends a lot of civil rights to increase combat effectiveness. I mean, we don't allow disabled or overweight people in the military in ways that would never be accepted if, at a normal business in Boston or New York or something like that. We need to make sure that we're asking these questions in a way that ensures that lives won't be put at risk by these changes as they're implemented.
Here's a question from our website, Colonel Mansour. This is from Craig in Omaha. He says, two of the men I served with in the Air Force NATO unit were closet homosexuals. They performed their tasks well and didn't bother any of the straight men in the unit. But Craig writes from Omaha, the biggest problem I see in implementing this repeal is in the military's chaplain corps. As he writes, fundamentalist Protestant churches have been packing this important service during the past two decades. What about that, Colonel Mansour?
Well, I don't get it with the chaplains, because in the 90s there was this big to-do about chaplains having to support the Wiccan movement, which is sort of like a white witchcraft movement.
Paganism.
And
mm-hmm.
paganism.
Mm-hmm.
And the chaplains actually came to the conclusion that they were there to service all religious beliefs, and so they would set up the fires out in the forest and would let the folks dance around or whatever they do. But it was not a big deal with the chaplain corps. And witchcraft is just as much against the Bible as homosexuality. And so why they would treat one different than the other is beyond me. I think the chaplains will come around, quite frankly.
Well, let's bring another voice in, if I may, right now. Godwin Schick joins us from Washington, was a staff sergeant in the U.S. Army. He is openly gay, left the Army because of the harassment he witnessed other gay soldiers receiving, served in Korea, 03 to 06, served in Iraq, Sunni Triangle, as recently as 09. Sergeant Schick, thank you very much for joining us. Godwin Schick, welcome.
Oh, hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
So let's think about this. Here's the signature today. The commander-in-chief has said let's go. Congress has said let's go. We've seen all the surveys of American public opinion and how much they've changed over time. Now we're looking at implementation. What do you anticipate there, Godwin Schick? Smooth sailing, salutes, and off we go. Difficulties? Where?
It's an interesting shift. I think a lot of this implementation is sort of been happening organically over the last several decades. So, I think my main concern is actually that the Army will perhaps overthink this and sort of just overassume that that the soldiers aren't ready for it, or service members aren't ready for it, and try to highlight the differences more than just say, all right, here's our directive.
Mm-hmm.
You're all professionals. Let's do this. And then just sort of leave some of the rough edges up to the unit commanders to sort of deal with. That would be my hope, is that they would sort of have a more passive approach to implementation as opposed to an active sort of everyone sit down for a week of sensitivity training, which I think is definitely possible. The implementation study, of course, I think laid down some really good groundwork, like not having homosexualities included in equal opportunity regulations. I think that's a really good step.
And what does that mean exactly? What does that mean? So what does it mean not to have it included there?
I'm sorry, say one more time.
What does it mean not to have it included in equal opportunity regulations? What's the significance of that?
Well, from the reading that I had of the implementation study, it was to sort of not separate homosexual soldiers out by not like sort of classifying them as a special type of soldier in mm-hmm. the way that some ethnic minorities or women sort mm-hmm. of, there's more of a need to classify them as a sort of a section of soldiers
mm-hmm.
Just to protect them against pervasive discrimination. I think the fact that homosexuality, it's not something you can just noticeably see on somebody when
mm-hmm.
you walk up to them,
mm-hmm.
you know, puts you in a special class of soldier where you don't necessarily need that extra protection. I mean, at least that's the assumption going forward. We'll see how things play out, you know, when the implementation actually happens. But my assumption, and from what I witnessed in the ranks, in the enlisted ranks, as a combat soldier in the military,
mm-hmm.
Is that people just don't care. You know, if you don't make an issue, it's not going to be an issue. And there'll always be little flame-ups, but I think that'll just be what those are, basically flame-ups.
In general,
soldiers just want to be the same.
Stand by, if you would. Let's get our listeners in here. Charleston, South Carolina. We've got Seth on the line. Seth, thanks for calling. What do you see?
Well, I see that, you know, being a CO of an infantry unit, that what's going to happen is that the COs that are like mine, and we have, and Peter's talked, that instead of being able to address this with the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, we're going to drive it underground where we use our leeway to enforce the policies using UCMJ and like assignments for schools and promotions and the ability to have good assignments, driving those people out if we see that. Go ahead.
Well, you're going to see it, and you say you are or have been a command, an Army commanding officer?
Yes, CO in Afghanistan, yes.
Okay, now, but it's already, hasn't it been underground with Don't Ask, Don't Tell? Isn't that what Don't Ask, Don't Tell meant, that it was required to be underground?
Well, now we're just going to make that, we're going to solidify that now. I mean, we're going to not be able to do it open with the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, and it's not going to be, those individuals of us are not going to be able to implement that policy, even though it's being directed from the top down.
Seth, your line's a little rough, but I appreciate your call. Seth Moulton, are you following that you get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and it goes further underground somehow?
I think I'm not sure exactly what he's saying, but perhaps there's some concern that not everybody will be committed to this change. I think one of the interesting points that Gottman brought up is that, you know, it's in some ways the generals who are more concerned about this than the troops. And that makes sense, right, because acceptance of gays has changed over time and younger people are much more accepting of them in society than older people.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my concerns is that people like the Commandant of the Marine Corps are going to be to think this through way too hard and make lots of rules that really don't need to be put in place and aren't necessary if you talk to the young guys who are actually in these combat units.
Just get out there and fight, you say. On the other hand, Gottman Schick, you left the military because of the harassment that you saw, so that was not nothing.
So most of the harassment I saw, which really surprised me, came from non-combat arms jobs, like friends of mine that were in MOSs that had nothing to do with combat arms, that were basically office jobs. In combat arms community, it may be a little counterintuitive, but I really had very little pushback for me being essentially a soldier who happened to be gay. So, I mean, I can't speak for how it would implement in those other sort of branches of the military, or mm-hmm. branches of the Army at least, is all I can speak for, really. But as far as the combat effectiveness and combat soldiers, I really didn't see much of a problem. Now, granted, this all comes down from the command. If your company or troop or battalion commander just happens to have a desire to put your personal life on the slab and you know, make you his essentially victimize you for your personal
life.
You know, there's not a lot you can do. You know, the rules under Donis and Tell were set up so that, I mean, they could initiate an investigation at that level, and, I mean, it could get pretty bad.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about implementing the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, making way for gays openly in the U.S. military. I'm joined today by Seth Moulton, a Marine captain who served four tours in Iraq, a couple of them as platoon commanders, a couple working with General David Petraeus. Peter Mansour is with us as well, now professor of military history at Ohio State University, author of Baghdad at Sunrise, a retired Army colonel with over 26 years of service, some of his also with General David Petraeus, graduate of West Point and the Army War College, been out there plenty. Godwin Schick is with us. He was a staff sergeant in the U.S. Army. He's gay, left the Army because harassment that he saw there, served in Korea, served in Iraq. Iraq joins us from Washington, as does Anna Mulrine, defense correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. Cynthia in Columbia, South Carolina. Cynthia, you're on the air.
Hello. I am, as a concerned citizen and also a pagan, by the way, want to raise a couple of points. It seems to me that the arguments about this issue come from a religious standpoint, in that religion, Christian, determines that gays are bad, wrong, or evil.
Some interpret it that way, okay.
Yeah, and that, so some do, correct. And, you know, what if, as myself, you're a pagan and you don't believe in the Bible, and you think that, though this country was founded by a sect of Christians, you know, we're not a Christian country.
Well,
why is this such a big deal, and why shouldn't gays have equal opportunity? Because, again, the judgment comes from this angle that homosexuality is somehow abhorrent or evil.
I understand exactly what you're saying, Cynthia. On the other hand, there's a culture here, and you know, it has changed over time. We can see that in the surveys, but not everybody is on the wave of that change, whether it's a religious perspective or not. What do you think? Can we just make it the law and boom, it's done? Everybody will be on board and no problems?
Well, I think that there's already gays serving in the military. And, you know, I also hear this angle that gay men particularly are predators, you know. I have somebody looking at my rear. It's like, you know, they're already there in the showers. They're already living together. You know, it's gay men are not necessarily predators. It seems to me most of the sexual harassment is a man against a woman. That I hear about advertised, and to a point, this pagan comment this gentleman made earlier, pagans, we don't hate the Bible, we just don't believe it's God's word. That's all.
Cynthia, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. One more from Boston. Peter, you're on the air.
Yes, thanks, Tom. Kudos to you, Tom, for a great program. And again, I'm one of your more conservative listeners who follows you because you allow everybody to give some contrary viewpoints. Two things. First, thanks to the service of your veterans out there.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, I've been a lawyer for 30 years. I know all the legal arguments, but more importantly, I was an infantry 0311 with 2nd Battalion, 1st Marines. There is absolutely a major problem here about the implementation with the Marine Corps, particularly the Marine Corps. Yeah, there's lies, damn lies, and statistics. You keep hearing 70% of that survey came out. Well, that wasn't the combat Marines. Now, one of the things the captain will probably also acknowledge, mm-hmm. in the Marine Corps, probably one out of five are in the infantry. From my reading of those statistics, almost the majority, much higher than 60% of the infantry troops, combat troops, were against it. The other 30% were still, so it was about at least 67% of the Marine Corps. The commandant was against it. It's about unit cohesion. Unit cohesion, and again, I would submit like an amicus curiae on behalf of the E5 and below. I was just a corporal. A Marine combat outfit is based on squads and platoons. These are corporals, sergeants,
yep.
PFCs, and privates. They do not interact with colonels. They do not interact with captains very much. They do not go with General Petraeus. These are the men who are fire team leaders, who are squad leaders, who need to count on their people. Now, I understand the law has been passed. My suggestion, they ought not to implement it now for the combat troops if they're while they're in combat. I mean, people keep forgetting they're in combat. A statistic I would show, the Marine Corps people who are getting killed are infantry people. They're not in the rear with the gear. It is not Air Force and Navy personnel.
Peter, let me ask you, the issue that's been raised here, one of the issues is around integrity. I mean, that's the first lesson when you enter the military. You know, you're going to be honest. You're going to be straightforward. This means people won't have to hide. The other one is you follow orders in the military. So now the path to integrity is opened, I guess, here, and the orders, I guess, will be pretty clear.
Understood. But here, you got to, all of it, yep. And the captain will tell you, you got an infantry squad, you got people coming in, you need to do what your job is. The number one job for a Marine rifle platoon in combat,
yep,
is to engage people and kill them. It's engage them in combat. Now, I'm talking about Fallujah and what they're fighting now, the 1st Marines, the 6th Marines. They're sending Marine combat troops in first to fight the Taliban, kill them, hopefully afterwards win hearts and minds with other people.
Yeah. Peter, we got it. You make your point very clearly. Let me put it right to our Marine captain, who served 4 terms there, 2 of them as a platoon commander, one of them in Najaf when the fighting was pretty tough there. So, Seth Moulton, Captain Moulton, what about unit cohesion as these orders begin to come down?
I mean, look, Peter raises legitimate concerns. I'm not going to deny that there's going to be some friction, and we need to listen to the lowest guys on the totem pole, the guys who are in infantry platoons, the guys who are out there as 0311s, the combat infantrymen in the Marines, because those lives are the ones that will be lost if this is handled poorly. And now, from my experience and having served with gay service members, including in infantry units, I don't think it will be a problem. But, you know, I can't speak for everyone in the Marine Corps, and we need to be very careful about implementing this in wartime. The reality, though, is that I think lives have also already been lost because of this ban. Well, you know, imagine being in an infantry platoon in the Marines and going through a city like Fallujah, and an Iraqi comes running up screaming to you and trying to tell you where a bomb is buried in the next block,
mm-hmm,
or where a sniper is setting up to try to shoot one of your fellow Marines,
mm-hmm,
and you don't have a translator because we've discharged thousands of Arabic linguists under this policy.
Who happened to be gay, and they were out. So you can't understand what the guy's saying as he's yelling up warning, coming up warning you.
And I'll tell you, you ask every one of those infantrymen in that platoon if they would rather have a gay translator or no translator at all in that situation, and they'll tell you they'd rather have a gay translator. So there are times, there are places where this ban has already affected our combat effectiveness. We need to make sure that getting rid of the ban doesn't hurt it as well.
Colonel Mansour, Seth Moulton's talking about being careful in implementation. Is there going to be the leeway to be careful, whatever that means, or is that going to come across as discrimination that's now not accepted?
No, unlike what the listener was saying, there will definitely not be some sort of special regulations for combat units. They will be forced to live by the same regulations as everyone else. But I want to pick up on another point that Seth made,
mm-hmm,
and that is to a certain extent, this is going to be easier to implement because we are at war, because we need these people. We need their specialties. What we found with the executive order that integrated the military back in 1948,
mm-hmm,
is that the military slow-rolled it until the,
yep,
need for infantry replacements in the Korean War became so acute that commanders at the front demanded that the military change the regulations and allow black infantrymen to serve in white units.
Race be damned. We need soldiers.
That's right. And that effectively ended integration in the military.
Or segregation, I guess.
Segregation. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get a call from Christian. Gavin, let me come first to you on this front of the battlefront, of the war front and service there. I mean, you heard our caller's concern about that, saying be careful, take your time, don't rush this. How do you respond to that, Gavin?
Well, I served in Iraq in 2009, which wasn't exactly, you know, there weren't a lot of fireworks at that point,
mm-hmm,
but we ran 2 or 3 missions a day regardless in a pretty, you know, in what used to be a pretty big hotbed. And I had soldiers who definitely knew I was gay, and they still don't necessarily like gay people, you know, they mm-hmm would make comments and stuff like that. And
mm-hmm,
But at the same time, they have no problem serving with you if they know you. You know, it's sort of like the difference between the abstract and the real. So when you do these surveys and you ask a bunch of infantry soldiers, like, oh, hey, do you want a gay person serving next to you? Do you want a gay person, you know, showering with you? They immediately think of the worst possible stereotype they can think of. And then they're like, hell no. But once you ask them, have you served with a gay person? Did they do their job? Would you serve with them again? That number goes up astronomically. So, I mean, it needs to get to this tipping point where the stereotype changes, where mm-hmm. so many people have served with openly gay soldiers, and hey, it's not a big deal. They're just like us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that stereotype will change. And I don't think soft pedaling this and rolling it out slowly will do anyone any favors. These guys are professionals. They'll be fine.
Anna, let me ask you, I mean, you know, things have changed so much in much of the younger generation. You can see in the opinion polls, there's so much wider acceptance than there was a generation ago. But it's almost so wide that people talk very frankly about a lot of things, including sexuality. People are gay. Their friends know it. They talk about it. That's in the civilian world. In the military, is it clear what's going to constitute harassment now? I mean, if one trooper says to another, you know, hey, gay guy, help me out here, is that harassment? Will it be?
And I think that's a great question, and that's what the military is going to have to grapple with. I mean, certainly to get back to the point about religious leaders, and that was one of the hypothetical vignettes that the military laid out. Okay, so what if you have a chaplain who is from the pulpit condemning homosexuality and saying that it's a sin.
Mm-hmm.
And that marriage should only be between a man and a woman. Well, the Pentagon says at this point, chaplains have the right to express their religious beliefs. And unless a chaplain's speech is otherwise prohibited, and that would be something like publicly maligning senior leaders is prohibited, then the sermons can't be restricted. So those are going to be things that the military is going to have to grapple with in the months to come.
Godman, does that seem workable to you, that you may have chaplains saying, you know, in their services, not cool, and servicemen, gay servicemen, lesbians, you know, just outside the chapel fighting. Does that seem workable, Godman? Is that all right? Are gays just going to have to sort of buck up and, take the guff?
Well, I mean, you know, gay soldiers have been sort of, rolling with it for a long time now. But
yeah.
I would absolutely be blown away if a chaplain was that, antagonistic. Chaplains are chaplains fill so many roles that are not specifically religious focused. You know, you can
mm-hmm.
have a chaplain talk about anything.
Right. Counseling,
anything.
Help.
And, mm-hmm. yeah, absolutely. And all the chaplains I've known, and I've known quite a few, I just absolutely cannot imagine any of them being that can disruptive.
Maybe, though we know there's been a pretty vigorous strain of fundamentalist religion in military ranks in recent decades. Let's get a call. Christian, speaking of, in Boston, you're on the air, Christian.
Yes, hi. I just had a comment about how we're sort of conflating the identity. We think of being gay as sort of a discrete category that's actually a social construction. It's a new idea that came up in the 20th century, at least in the West. And how we're confusing that with same-sex sexual behaviors that we see in homosocial environments like the military and, let's say, also athletic teams, and how we think that we can sort of separate these identities and categories of people, and we assume that because we can do that, that there are sort of characteristic traits of that category of people that are somehow problematic to the functioning of the military.
Now, Krishna, I take your point, and I get the subtlety of it. At the same time, there are a lot of gay Americans and lesbian Americans proudly putting themselves in that category who will now be, free to proudly serve in the U.S. military. One more, Bowling Green, Kentucky. Larry, you're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to say I was retiree, served for 23 years. During that period in time, I have roomed with several individuals who were gay.
Yep.
It was never an issue. They remain my friends today. We call each other to see how we're doing. I think this new ruling will make it very comfortable for those individuals who are gay as far as being accepted back into the military, which they have been there for years.
And you're saying bravo, Larry?
I'm saying bravo.
I appreciate your call. Here's a web comment from Maddie saying, just as in any workplace, this is a non-issue. It was don't ask, don't tell, don't care in practice in the military. People want to come out fine, though they probably won't. It's their business. That's interesting. Some may still choose not to. Here's another listener comment. As this unfolds, Peter Mansur, let me put this to you. Will straight people continue to reenlist at the same rate and join in the same numbers? If not, the armed services will become smaller and perhaps more gay over time. What do you say, Peter Mansur?
Yeah, I don't think that'll be the case. There may be a few people that have such deep religious beliefs that they'll resign or won't join up, but I think the numbers will be very small. But on what the listener said, you know, I agree. I think the big thing for gay service members here is the ability to serve without fear of being discharged if your orientation became known. You know, I've seen polls, again, that says that the majority of gay service members are not going to come out, but that they're just happy that they're not going to be pursued also. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that works out in practice. But the ability to do your job without fear is the big thing here.
Seth Moulton, you've been a young captain in the U.S. Marines. I don't know, look ahead to 10 years when we get past this implementation phase, and it's just the way it is. How do you foresee this unfolding over time?
I think 10 years from now, the military will be able to accept the best people that can serve regardless of their sexual orientation, the same way that we now accept the best people who can serve regardless of their skin color. And in the long run, it will only make the military stronger.
And Godman, Schick, do you see a civil rights breakthrough and one that's consistent with the function of the U.S. military?
Oh, I see it as just professionalism winning out. You know, the military is always what struck me the most about the military when I was in it was just this awesome professionalism, and that's what's going to win. We're going to get the best person for the job, period.
Peter Mansur, you got the confidence? Awesome professionalism will win the day?
Well, the numbers we're talking about are a lot smaller than African Americans, which are about 22% of the military, and women, which are 16%. I imagine these numbers are more like under 3%. And I think in 10 years, this is just going to be a non-issue.
Anna Mulrein, last word to you, just on timing. When is this expected to be implemented? Is in 2011, you know, within a year, less?
Well, certainly Secretary Gates has said that President Obama would be watching the Pentagon closely and that the Pentagon had no intention of slow-rolling this in the military's parlance. And I think the big issue in the you know, years ahead, once this is implemented, is going to be partner benefits as well and benefits that come through the Defense of Marriage Act that ban spouses from being considered same-sex partners and how that's going to relate. So to the Pentagon's benefits.
More chapters to come here, maybe, but right now, civil rights and what cultural evolution roll on now and today with the president signing in a big way into the U.S. military. Seth Moulton, a Marine captain, served 4 tours in Iraq. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Peter Mansur, author of Baghdad at Sunrise, a retired Army colonel. Professor Mansur, thank you for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure.
Godman Schick, former U.S. Army Staff Sergeant, thank you, Sergeant Schick. And Anna Mulrein, thanks to you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.